Hi, and welcome to the Lactation Training Lab podcast. I'm Christine, an IBCLC and lactation career coach. I'm the host of the Evolve Lactation Community, a membership group which helps current and aspiring lactation care providers optimize their lactation practice and career through resources, information, and mindset shifts that help them to clarify and reclaim their purpose and mission in lactation work. I've been in the lactation field for more than 20 years now, and this podcast is my way of sharing with you what I've learned and what the future may hold for those of us supporting families and babies. Whether you're seasoned or studying, I hope this show will make you think and inspire you to act. Let's get started. On today's episode, we have a very exciting new feature. We're going to welcome a guest to the show. And our guest today is Niamh Cassidy from Ireland. And the reason that I've invited Niamh is we've recently connected through the Evolve Lactation community. We really hit it off. We've had a lot of good and deep and important conversations that are helping me to reframe some of the ways that I think about lactation, because as always, when we speak to somebody who doesn't practice right where we are, we have to look at things through a different lens. And so sometimes the questions that she asks help me to contextualize things. And I think it works both ways. So I really look forward to you hearing from Niamh. She's got so much to share and we've got so much to get through together. So without any further, let's welcome Niamh Cassidy to the show. Hi, Niamh.
Hi, Christine. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you. I'm so excited. And when you said yes to being interviewed on this podcast, it really, really made my day. Oh, really happy to have you here. So let's start out. Why don't you tell our audience just a little bit about your background and how you got into lactation work and anything that you want to share about where you're located in the world and your family and that sort of thing.
Great. So I'm in Dublin in Ireland, and I have two boys who are 8 and 6. I got into the lactation world, I suppose, from my own breastfeeding journeys. Well, first of all, my own breastfeeding journey as a baby. I was breastfed till I was 3. So when I was pregnant, it was always going to, for me, I really felt that I wanted to breastfeed. And then when Keane was born, we ran into some challenges and I attended my local breastfeeding peer support group and got lots of support from the volunteers there. And I went to my support group every week for the 9 months that I was off work, sometimes for breastfeeding support, but a lot of times for the tea and the biscuits and just the being told that everything's going to be okay kind of chats.
Sure.
So then I'd been there for so long, I really enjoyed how much help I had gotten. I decided that I would train as a volunteer breastfeeding counselor. And in the organization I did that with, it took about 2 years to do that. So I attended breastfeeding group as much as I could after I went back to work while I was training as well. And then as I got pregnant again, or before I got pregnant again, I got interested in the antenatal education end, and I trained as an antenatal educator, and I teach antenatal classes as well from that point of view. And then I did the lactation consultant exam, and I've been in private practice for about a year.
Wow. So how do you think that your lactation learning journey, how you actually went through the process of becoming an IBCLC, impacted how you practice and what your goals are as a lactation care provider?
So I think coming through the volunteer route really makes me focus a lot on the counseling end, because that would have been a huge focus of what we were trained in as the volunteers, very much in the counseling. I also have a social care background, so before I left work to focus on lactation care, I was a social care worker working in homeless services. And a lot of obviously counseling, active listening comes into that work as well. So I think that's really framed in how I practice, having not come from a medical background so much. I have to learn a lot more of that stuff kind of from the books. But the counseling end of it comes more naturally to me, and the kind of working with the whole person.
Wow, that's quite a background. So you feel like what you learned as a counselor is, you know, in counseling in a different way, counseling in a completely different setting, has been able to be translated into the work that you do now.
Yeah, absolutely. In both, like, my paid work before as a social care worker. So as I mentioned, I worked with homeless young people, and I also worked with families who were experiencing homelessness. And obviously, when you come into that environment, you have to do a lot of story listening. So a lot of listening to where they've come from, and a lot of taking in bits of information without judgment, without while staying objective, and being able to kind of bring an air of it's okay, you can talk when I'm around. And that would be very much how my consults would start, I suppose. It'd be a lot of listening.
That probably sounds familiar to a lot of our listeners, because that's so much of what we do in a lactation consult, is listening to the birth story. Even in an antenatal consult, often if they've had a baby before, we're listening to that birth story and listening to the sort of, you know, them wondering what the next birth will be like. So it sounds like that really has translated very well into what you do now. What do you think your counseling background gives you that makes you different than other lactation consultants?
I think one of the things that I took from social care work in particular was around care planning. So I'm not 100% sure how other people write their care plans, but for me, we in social care, we had support plans. So they were support plans around the whole person. And I write my care plans in that same way. So they may very much focus on the person as a whole. And I know many lactation consultants bring in other aspects, so I'm not saying it's completely unique, but I do feel coming from social care, you know, I look a lot at the what's going on in the family environment. How is sleep affecting? Is there mental health going on? And anything else that might come apparent that might could, because all of those things can influence the lactation journey. So in writing my care plans, they're very much obviously with the history base, but then they're focused on different aspects of the person's life that we would discuss in the session. So they know that we've discussed it already. I've given some information or support. And while I might not be the person that provides the additional support in those additional areas, it is still written into the care planning process so that they have it there for themselves to know that it's a holistic setting that they're being cared for in.
Sure. So in that setting, I'm sure that you were able to provide resources and phone numbers and contacts for other kinds of services that you elicited that the family might need. And I'm sure you do the same thing now. And what can you share about how that works, where you are in your community? Is there a good connection of services that also are important for breastfeeding families there?
So it can be dependent on the very even the suburb that the person lives in, but there are lots of different community supports available, but you kind of have to get to know who they are and where they are and whether how people can link in with them, because it can be a bit piecemeal. I suppose having done the work that I did before, I would know a lot of those services and I already know what they do and I already know who to contact and who the people are. So it's come easy, I suppose, for me to be able to have those resources to be able to link people into.
Wow. I know that that can be something that people struggle with if they have to move during their lactation career. And that's kind of common. You know, you're getting to know your own new community and trying to share resources. Sometimes you're actually learning from your clients because you're newer than they are. So another thing we've talked about quite a bit. Now, before the pandemic era really began, I spent a lot of time thinking about how lactation care providers manage their own story and manage their own experiences, and how if they don't do that, it can be really hard for them to be effective counselors. And then we've had this pandemic, which we're still working through, and people feels like a lot of people still have, you know, unprocessed emotion. People still have grief, and there's a lot going on for people behind the scenes as we get back out into the world and start doing more things. And people are doing even more consults now because they've resumed in person in a lot of places. And so what do you think, we've talked a lot offline about vicarious trauma and the ways that people process their own things. So talk to us a little bit about what you know about vicarious trauma and how that leaks in, how that sort of bleeds into the work that you do when you are a counselor exposed to this high energy type of work that we do.
Yeah, so vicarious trauma is something that happens to care providers, people who spend time with other people, listening to other people's stories who may have experienced trauma or who might witness medical trauma in a medical setting in their role as their job. And when I was a social care worker, very much part of our training in our degree was around looking at how that can impact us, how we can minimize the impact, and how we, and if we don't, what the consequences for that can be. So if we become subjects of vicarious trauma over and over again and don't manage to work our way through that or get the support that we need, people can very much end up with burnout or with compassion fatigue or with not being able to provide the type of care to the people that they're serving that they want to give to them because it's too difficult. And when you're in it, it's hard to see it. So it's more about preventing it before it happens. I think the first point of that is looking at ourselves before we even step in front of a client, and how have we processed our own lactation journey? Have we processed our own birth journey? Because the first thing, as you mentioned earlier, is we hear the birth story. And quite often that can be a traumatic birth story that we're hearing. And we might be the first person that woman has told that story to. And we give the space and we give the time to allow them to explore that story. But over months and years and time, hearing those stories over and over and over again can really affect a care provider. So if we don't look after ourselves in that, it can impact in how we provide care. So I think before anyone goes into a journey, or if they've already started and they haven't done it yet, to really do a lot of self-reflection on our own birth stories, on our own breastfeeding stories, and to do that in a way that we're able to accept that they're there, know that we have those thoughts and that sometimes things might rise up in us, but that we're able to say, okay, I'm going to put that to the side. I'll deal that with that with my peers or with my supervisor later. But I'm able to give myself fully to this woman. And if there is something that raises in us during a story, that we do then go out and seek that support to debrief it, you know, to give it to somebody else to talk it through, because otherwise it does build and it does build and it does build, and people can become seriously ill or leave the profession when they didn't want to because of the buildup of that vicarious trauma.
What a loss that is when that happens too, because, you know, the training and experience that people gain over time is irreplaceable. And so to lose somebody because of that reason is really difficult. Although we respect people who, you know, set that boundary and need to step away, whether it's temporarily or permanently. And I know that in my experience, I've mostly had the opportunity, really, to me, the privilege of being able to work in groups of lactation care providers where there was already a built-in way of getting feedback from one another and venting and, you know, letting some of those feelings out. What would you recommend for somebody who practices independently and they don't have a lot of contact with other people who do this work? So they may not have a lot of people in their life that they could even share this with if it was happening to them.
I think it's really important to build your own community in those scenarios. So to reach out and to find others. So there are going to be other lactation providers somewhere, and if there isn't any in your within 100 miles, you find them online. You know, you can link into different groups in your own support network or in what you're doing with Evolve, and being able to bring to people from across the world together in a space where they can talk through those things, they can reflect on any experience that they're having with other people who will have some level of understanding of what that means for them.
Sure, those are good tips. I appreciate that. How do you feel about the current situation or reality of how lactation training is structured? And with your background, you have so much experience in counseling. So obviously that's an important pillar for you in how you built your practice and your career. How do you think that the current structure of how lactation training is could be improved in terms of being able to make sure that people coming into the profession have the best counseling foundation that they can?
I really wish, first of all, if there was some sort of structured programs that could be rolled out across where people could sign up and do the whole lot together, you know, so all of your 90 hours and your counseling and have mentorship, and in an ideal world, all of that would come together at once. But I do think it's important that there's some level of interview or some level of just a little bit more on the people skills end of it. I suppose you can answer multiple choice questions on people skills, but can you relate with people? And if it's especially when people are coming from different backgrounds, depending on whether they're coming from a counseling end, when they're coming from a medical end, or they could be coming from very different medical ends either, you know, it might not be specifically in nursing or midwifery, and that they're kind of coming through, that there's so much varied experience, there needs to be some sort of minimum standard of rapport building, counseling skills, relationships, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that we've talked about so many times throughout my career is that the different pathways, so that pathways are set up in a way that they can accommodate all the different needs and the different realities of people trying to do this training in different regions and different countries and, you know, in different settings. So it makes for a very, you know, like you said, it's a little bit piecemeal in some ways. And we, as mentors, when we have students and when we have interns, we often see that through the Pathway 3 program, where people have to have directly supervised clinical hours, the opportunity there to help someone develop into a really great counselor, we look at the other pathways and think, how do they get that in the pathways that they're doing when they don't always have those opportunities for this direct mentorship? And the counseling part is often, I think, what can be missing from that. And so unfortunately for those folks, they have to learn it on the job, and that's really challenging. And it's probably a bit frustrating because I've had people come back to me after they've gone through a pathway one, you know, path, and then started practicing after they received their certification and passed the boards. And they've come back and said, I actually really don't know how to do this. Can we work together now? Because sometimes that part of it is just not, it's just not enough. And they really needed that direct supervision, that direct feedback really is what it is. It's not necessarily supervision. It's more of a feedback loop that, oh yeah, that's exactly, you did such a great job, you know, working with that person in that moment when she was so very upset, or that was perfect how you brought in the support person to help in that moment and make sure that those things were working together. So is there, I mean, do you have a vision for how that would work? Do you feel like that would be part of something that people would practice during their mentorship or during their pathway, or something that was more like part of the exam process, you know, maybe an interview kind of thing?
I think there's probably scope for both and to see which would work out best. I know I was really lucky. So even if we take away my social care background, because I did the volunteer breastfeeding counseling and I was part of an organization, that there was lots of women lactation consultants and breastfeeding counselors who were ahead of me. So I had a network of support through my entire training and once I started practice. And even before I did my exam, I reached out to one of my personal mentors, who was one of the tutors on my training group, and asked, you know, will you do some work with a few of us that are doing the exam? Will you help us in around what the reality of being a lactation consultant is? Because we didn't have to do mentorship because we were doing our hours with the organization, but we were doing counseling hours. And the role of a breastfeeding counselor is different to the role of a lactation consultant. So I actually reached out to her and said, can you help us with this? There's a bunch of us doing it. Can you put it together a program for us, and she did. And we continue that mentorship now, and we meet up every few months, and we have coffee in IKEA. And we talk about all the different things that are going on, whether it's the business end, the practice end, or the emotional end. So we've kind of built our own support and supervision sort of community. And I think that would be a really helpful thing if it could somehow be built into the different maybe organizations in the different countries who are working together around even preparing people for exams, or who know that people are preparing for exams, to make a little bit more formal that people can opt into this and maybe encourage them that they should.
Sure. One of the things that I often recommend to people when they're reaching out with questions about the process of becoming an IBCLC is that they reach out to their local either breastfeeding coalition or task force, or their local US Lactation Consultant Association chapter, because building those networks and those connections with other people who already do the work is half the battle, you know. And I find that a lot of people who are getting into the field are, that's the first time someone has said that to them. That's the first time they've even thought of it. And it's also, for some people, it's a great way to find a mentorship opportunity when people are struggling to find their clinical hours. So that can be an important way to figure out, you know, which hospitals in your area might let you in to do some hours, and how you can make that part of it happen. Because it feels like so many people are doing most or all of their training online at this point. There are in-person classes, but I don't know if, I mean, are we going to swing all the way back to the way we were before and have as many in-person classes? I find that hard to believe. I think that, you know, we've seen so much change. And, you know, with that, how do you feel about the amount of virtual education that we've had over the last few years? And are you a person who is really, really missing those in-person lactation conferences and connections? How are you feeling about all of that?
I feel in some ways it was so much benefit to be able to attend things, you know, all over the world, to learn from all these different people, and to be able to do it probably at a more reasonable price than traveling. But at the same time, being in the room with someone is a completely different experience, and I've learned at least a lot better in that scenario. And I feel I teach a lot better in that scenario as well. So even though I teach online antenatal classes as well as in person, the in-person definitely gets more than they do online. And even doing things like looking at oral restrictions, doing that online, you know, you can't get the real practical experience and understanding of how the oral cavity works when you're looking at a computer screen, rather than, you know, being in person, either with models, doll models, or with real life babies. So there's definitely room for both, but I would hope that we get some more of the in-person back.
So let me take that question just a little bit deeper, because as you were talking, I was kind of thinking, I feel like there's a lot of people who have really good skills in terms of working one-on-one with clients virtually through telehealth, being able to assess babies. I feel like my skills in assessing for oral restrictions and other kinds of structural issues have really improved, you know, virtually, because I've just had more experience doing it. But what about how we learn those skills? Like, would I have been able to get all of the, like, to even get better if I hadn't originally learned in person with babies in the room, you know, on my lap or in front of me? What do you think about that?
Yeah, and that was actually what I was leaning towards, was around people like me who were early on in their career learning those skills online. Mm-hmm. It's much harder to learn that online, and then even to be able to do it virtually. I think definitely you need the in-person learning to be able to do it virtually. Then later on, you know, with all of your years experience, you would have been able to then bring that in a much more real way than someone who has only learned about oral restrictions online. It would be very difficult when you don't really know what it feels like when a baby wraps their tongue around your baby.
That's true. there's more nuance to it than there is with, say, latch and positioning, you know, mm-hmm. and we've been able to talk a lot of people through that, you know, virtually. And because we used to talk them through it on the phone, if you think about that. Yeah. But when you're looking for restrictions and when you're looking at how a baby is moving and their, you know, just their entire person, it and even when you're looking for red flags or you're looking for indications from a mother that she's really uncomfortable, you don't get the same body language virtually. You know, sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't. And you always mm-hmm. wonder if there's something missing. I think when your background is more built on those in-person experiences. So I'm curious to, you know, to start asking people who've done the bulk of everything that they've done virtually, you know, do you feel like you're really proficient at this, or do you feel like there's something missing too? And, you know, are you planning to go through with getting some more in-person training? But I know that for me, my background in mother support organizations, in the first support group that I was in, which led into my career, was led by a former La Leche League leader. So it was very La Leche League style. And then, you know, I've been involved with Baby Cafe for years now. And so that mother support setting has been instrumental for me in learning so many things. And I really encourage that for people, you know, even when they say, well, you know, the process takes too long, or that's not the way I want to become an IBCLC. Okay, but still go to one, still go and sit there, still go and understand what it's all about. It really makes a difference. Do you still host any, or do you still lead any groups?
Yeah, I still lead breastfeeding group probably about once a month in my local family resource center. And it's such a lovely space to be in, and I still love and really enjoy going with the group element and the tea and the biscuits and being able to kind of just relax people into it and show that, you know, it's a welcoming space, and it's not something that has to be full of challenges, and that they can learn from each other. I love the learning of the mothers from each other. Sometimes I don't say a whole lot when I'm there. I like to let them watch and see everybody learn from each other as well, because there's so much knowledge in that. And I definitely agree, no matter what pathway you're coming through in your training, to try to get to some volunteer groups, because you will learn a lot in just observing how the volunteers handle conversations and how the reactions of the mothers to certain tones, and, you know, to just see how people react to even the words that are used or how things are discussed. I definitely think there's a lot of learning in attending.
I do too. I completely agree. And I, you know, sometimes you see that there's people who come in so tense and anxious, and then they just have to see that there's somebody there who's breastfeeding, who's very relaxed. Or somebody who seems to be enjoying it, but there's also somebody who's maybe mad that their baby wakes up all night. Like, there's so many ways to feel about it, and it's okay to feel all of those things in the same day. And they see that, you know, they see each other crying and they see each other rejoicing over victories. And that just is so much more meaningful than having only a one-on-one relationship with a consultant or a counselor that, you know, is just basically answering your questions. So that, you know, that part of it is so beneficial. In your group, do you do training of other volunteers? Do you get mothers who are asking, like, how do I get to do what you do? How much of that is happening?
Yeah, so they do ask. They have to be a member of our organization for 6 months before they're allowed to apply. They then have to be known to the local committee, so be involved and have attended breastfeeding group themselves. So even before they started training, that has to have happened. What they were finding was that sometimes people were asking to do the volunteer training just so that they could go down the lactation consultant pathway, mm-hmm. not because they were part of the group and wanted to do the training. So yeah, we do that. I'm not one of the tutors on the group, but I do references for people who want to do the training.
Wow. Yeah, I've always enjoyed that part of being part of mother support groups, is that it's a great place that we get to meet people who want to get into the field. And sometimes people start and then they decide this isn't going to work, or something happens in their family that, you know, it just doesn't work out for them. But for the most part, people come in with passion and they just grow that right there.
Absolutely. I think most people, it happens the way it happened for me. They came to group, they enjoyed group, they got a lot of support from group, and then they want to give back and they want to give that support to somebody else.
I don't think I ever thought when I was going to the group that it was something that I could do or that I would ever do it. It was, you know, it was presented to me on a silver platter by the leader of the group. Hey, do you want to go to this training? I was like, what? I didn't realize that was an option. But once it was an option, then it became an obsession.
Yes. And I have approached a few mothers in my group at different times to say, hi, I think you'd be good at this. And definitely the eyes light up, I think.
And it's so fun because it's something that doesn't have anything to do with, there's no other way to judge how, if a person would be good at it, other than you saw them either overcome obstacles or truly enjoy their experience, learn something from it, and you saw the way that they interact with other people. That's it. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with anything else about them. Like, it's so cool. You don't have to think, well, this person is educated, or this person happens to have a lot of intelligence, or this person is this social class. It doesn't matter. It's about how they interact with other people and how they present their thoughts and opinions on breastfeeding. And the ones who are willing to speak up about it a lot of times turn out to be the smartest, you know, the most able, the most capable of going somewhere really fast. So, and sometimes the quietest people also are there because they're just so passionate. Like they're just watching and observing everything so much. They don't have a lot of time to engage. So I think we get so much out of that. And I really enjoy that part.
Yeah, me too. I think those quiet people can sometimes, you might see them just having a one-to-one with somebody in the corner rather than contributing to the whole group, but they're definitely there building those relationships and supporting each other.
And we need every one of those kinds of people. We need every style and, you know, every kind of practice style is important. There's a place for it. So to round this out, one other thing that I know that you are doing is you're doing speaking opportunities. You're, you know, wanting to get out there even more, and, you know, speak to different audiences. So tell us a little bit about what you bring to the room when you speak.
So I'm trained in antenatal education or in adult education. So I'm very much into kind of workshop based or getting the audience engaged. Mm-hmm. So even if I'm standing up on a podium on a stage, it's highly likely I'm going to try and get you engaged in some way, whether it's individually or with whoever is sitting next to you. And I really feel that people, the impact of the learning can be a lot deeper when people have needed to be engaged. We've seen that through the online learning in particular. It's very easy to scroll on your phone while half listening to something. But when someone is asking you direct questions and bringing you into the group, whether it's online or in person, it can definitely enhance that learning. I'm really passionate about the first few days of breastfeeding and how that impacts on the rest of breastfeeding, around oxytocin and skin to skin and getting out of the hospital while still breastfeeding, because that's a real problem here in Ireland. So I'm really interested in those type of things.
I love the way you say that, getting out of the hospital still breastfeeding. that's a good way of putting it. And, you know, that's a frame of reference that so many of us can really get along. We can understand that. And it's kind of what we're doing, but we don't always say it that way. That's a really interesting way to say it. I love that. And obviously that resonates with me because of my first 100 hours project. So I think that this is a great opportunity for people if looking for a speaker who has your type of background, where you've got so much counseling experience, but not only in the maternal child health space. You've got other types of counseling experience that you can bring to, you know, help people expand on their own counseling skills. Plus you've got the clinical side. So I think that's a really great package to be offering there. So is there anything else that you would like to share? Sometimes, you know, I like to hear about people's overall mission or their purpose in lactation work, why you got into it, and what you hope that your legacy or your impact will be long term.
So with both the antenatal end and the lactation end, I'm really interested in evidence-based care and ensuring that women and families have access to the information that they need to make their own informed decisions. And that's what I would really like for every woman in the world, to be able to make informed decisions that she feels happy with, she feels comfortable with, and that when she looks back, she doesn't have regrets.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. That's beautiful, Neve. Thank you so much for being with us today. I hope this audience has, you know, taken a lot away from this. I know that I have, and I really, really appreciate your time. So thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.